Miss McIntosh, my darling, Chapter 72, Part 3. Even if her father, this passive policeman, had known who it was, he might have said nothing. He being so big-boned, so gentle, the night policeman who separated loving couples in the graveyard and always whistled to warn them when he came. He had even let the bank robber slip through his fingers. He was a night policeman, heavy, big-footed, climbing the graveyard hill in the moonlight, whistling, swinging his stick against the tomb so he would catch no guilty one. But her mother, chattering, fluttering, awake when her father slept, would complain always to him, even when he was sleeping, that they had an old maid on their hands, someone who would not go out, someone who had almost taken her life when she was born, tearing her skin, breaking her bones. Her mother having such small, delicate veins, so frail and recessive a heart that she had lain in a coma for weeks afterward, scarcely breathing, hovering between life and death, and had been fed through an eyedropper, only a drop of water, not enough to keep a bird alive, and then had eaten only a crumb of bread. "Nobody here really knows me as I am," said Esther Longtree, "but the stillborn and the white birds and the blackbirds and the men who are passing through on the way from here to there, the men who were the happy fathers. The men, all like moths in a storm, the traveling salesman passing through, the General Electric representative, the man who was on his way to the Cumberland Gap and thought that he had reached it, the man who was on his way to Salty, Utah, the Mormon, the soap salesman, the Antichrist, the rubber salesman, the toy salesman, the bird shooters, the bridge menders, the butterfly catchers, the WPA, the men. She could not count them. All so puny, sterile, unsatisfied, all who had cried in her arms. But they remembered her and clashing reeds in a ruined garden, and they were the happy fathers. Some could never come back, having their territory changed by the company when the child was conceived and before it was born. Some might have gone beyond this world. Yet they remembered her, wherever they were, and often years after the conception, would write to ask if the child ever was born. One wrote asking if it was a little Jehovah's Witness he had left among the Johnny Jump-Ups. A dwarf? How old now? So expecting it, the foremost pole of the advancing child, that I look for always night and day and dilation, the cartilage tearing and the eyes opening. I will not let it loose itself as the others did in the grass or stream. Gone before I knew it and could not stop it or light of dawn. But it is here now, under my heart, crouched where I placed my hand, and did not move for fear, as you can see. It is sitting with its chin pressed on its chest, and its arms folded over its face, and its knees up to its chin, still, still, its little heart pounding. I know, when I heard it, my thought, afraid I might get rid of it, we being so attached like moon and tide. At night it walks back and forth, restless as I am, head hanging and moans and groans, will not let me sleep fast. The secret, omnivorous life moved in the darkness, and it was hers. She was getting rid of all her little fears, one by one, all but the yawning fear of fear, she said, yawning. What if her parents came to know her, who did not know each other except across the distance like a desolate gray plain, where one old mule with a broken back looms forever against the evening sky? They would be surprised. Perhaps she was vulgar, as they thought, but she was also experienced, casting a big shadow where she walked with head drooping and sad. Sometimes there would not be a thought in her head, a drooping head, not even the tender ghost of a baby thought, and then she was happy, alone, walking the gray, uneven fields with her red plush tongue hanging out and her long black hair flowing free and her walnut jewelry clanking melodiously as bells and her wooden shoes in her hands, not on her feet, which were too big for size 11 shoes. If it was night, even sometimes if it was day, and the pale stars shining and no little child looking from among the rain-washed gooseberry bushes, she would strip off her tight maternity clothes and roll on the bare ground or stand up on her hind feet and bray like the wind and browse among the branches of the peach tree, eating the soft herd peaches, and browse among the cherry trees, and browse among the pecan trees that were brought from the old Jerusalem. She would rub her moon-streaked breasts against the moon gleamings of pomegranates. She liked the outdoors and wind. Her arms were stained by wind and rain and sunlight. Her hide was toughened and darkened by splotches of rain. Her neck muscles rippled. She was strong and was gathering strength for the winnowing test when she might be laid low. Her parents would be saddened, her father, her mother, her children. Pregnancy, which some women complain so much of, blaming their husbands and evil fate and saying that they would rather crawl upon their hands and knees over fields of jagged, everlasting ice and snow, pregnancy was nearly always her blissful condition of body and everlasting. But yet there was a modicum of sorrow in this happiness, for so far, to be sure, she had lost the baby before it was matured, and when it was a white bird or snowflake, and had no eyes and no ears, this had almost always happened. What was her trouble if not this, the shifting of luminous clouds? It even worried her. She would ask old Dr. O'Leary how to change it when he came in here to borrow a nickel for his drink, but he always did give her everlasting hope. To beware, he said, of the atmospheric pressure, of over-fecundation, of walking in the wind, of talking too much and too loud, for God loves a silent woman. Her trouble might be, he believed, something of the kidney or bladder or barren bowel. She should eat no sugar and should stay off her feet. She was over-hopeful and bloated with no form within the form, so far as his blear eyes could see, and it was a cloud. But she could only laugh when he talked thus, for though he had made all his mistakes in the past, just as she had, perhaps he could not make still another mistake, so why should she not eat sugar if she wanted to? He had lost many babies when he was still practicing, some when they were born and some when they grew old. He had lost many women. He took out a man's kidney once before he knew that the man was born with only one kidney, and the man died bloated like a whale, and there had been the other mistakes. Of course, he was still a good doctor, but to show that he might be wrong and she right, she was always walking in the wind, and always eating sugar, and always pregnant. She was eating a donut now, licking the sugary brown crumbs from her lips, smiling as at some great secret joke which only a pregnant woman could realize. She had lived through this before. It was she who had given birth to so many little children, as many as the autumn leaves where no spring ever was, the snowflakes, while all the old doctor ever did now was to deliver old ghost babies to old grandmothers and none of hers. His was the arctic glare, the driving snow, hers was the great yawning hope, the distended sense, the void. There was nothing wrong with her, no sense lacking, her eyes bright, her ears keen and dull. And yet she had lost them, the stillborn all unformed, all folded, all like rosebuds withered in the blast, tissue, bone, eye cupped in her brawny hands, a great mass, a thorax, a long gold hair, a tooth, a toenail. Perhaps there were shavings of the moon. How could this have happened to her? But if it was formed as occasionally had happened, then it was hardest to lose, perfect but stillborn, staring at the silvery pewter-colored sky and hands folded, no funeral but the leaves falling. Or it might have no eyes to stare with, and that, said the old doctor, was the modicum of sorrow you might expect in your condition, Esther Longtree. There is something about all of us, he said, that is unrealized. Grimacing, smiling, puzzled, her eyes crossing, uncrossing, her great body rigid, Esther Longtree sat upon the high stool, numb fingers moving as she tried to remember it, the disappointment. Which among so many? Now, it might happen slowly, but it had also happened swiftly when not even in her mind, the stars whirling before she could realize, all stars rushing together to be one great star where all would be complete, living and dead, and then a dull torpor as she realized the disappointment of her body, sinning and alone. It had happened one night at the skating rink when she broke her garter. With her deformed foot buried in the grass, she had stood outside the open skating rink, her stagnant pregnancy like a watershed under her heart. And there, under the slow skating stars in the heavens, had watched the marathon skaters gliding past, their faces powdery with weariness, the tall men with their thin girls hanging around their necks, and none could have noticed the pregnant woman in the shadows, her swollen breasts, her clammy hands, her heaving when she was suddenly taken by childbirth, and was vertiginous, feeling the stormy wings of angels brushing her cheeks, a little hand pulling out her hair, her clothes torn off, her garter snapping. Skaters had glided past her with sleepy eyes, none could have seen the pregnant woman who ran until the snow fell from the summer sky. Could no one have helped her? Who would not be baffled if it had happened to them as to her, thinning and alone, for it must have been the fault of the fathers, of the sky, of the wind, of the high places, of the abode of the blessed dead? What she had passed was a spider's web that she had laid among the clanking lily stalks. Who would not be saddened if it happened to them as to her, a torn spider's web passing, a little foot, a little hand, all folded, all crushed and sudden, and she so thin? Some scorched feather that drifted from the burning sky, she guessed, and fooled her. Yet how not be hopeful? For her mind was now as clear as a jewel that has no cloud upon it, clouded though her body was. If her body was not clouded, then her mind was. The boss, the oldest pinnacle player, had told her that she was gambling less than he was, for it was no spotted dice, but she should not play with the little children in the restaurant or have them here. There was nothing wrong with her, she having no psychological derangement, no high blood pressure, no low blood pressure, no blood pressure at all. The old doctor had said that she was the immortal medical case of baffling. The bald spot was growing like the bald spot of the earth, and her spinal column was excellent, her muscles being also of excellent tone, her memory excellent. Everything was long ago prepared for the eventuality of that great delivery when the flesh should leave the flesh. Everything was ready. She had foreseen all needs of the little one. She had collected the toys for the little one to play with when he was born, the rubber ducks, the building blocks and abacus, spools, everything. The rubber nipples in case her breasts, which were now flowing, should then be dry, bottles, sterilizers, sponges, and everywhere throughout the years of the everlasting pregnancy had buried laid out in long white boxes, digging at night, and buried them under the roots and vines and under the moon-globed persimmon. Breaking the bough and peach and cherry, all the clothes that might be needed, safety pins, shoe buttons, pieces of dry bread, and long ago, suffused with the most glowing expectations, had begun it, her knitting of a little black suit for the firstborn who would live and be not lost in the Arctic glare where the others were, or just as far as she knew, sitting together on the opposite side of the Milky Way. Sometimes she would unravel the stitches in order to be able to knit them again, but lately, with her fingers busy and her mind clear, she was knitting without needles or thread and never did unravel any more. Troubles, troubles, coils, traps, a scarecrow, what mattered to a pregnant woman? For after stillbirth, which would have agonized the timid and the small bones, she would be back here, smiling and pregnant, and no one seemed to see that there were black circles under her eyes, that her heart was hollow, and no one ever realized except, of course, the happy fathers. They nearly always knew, for she nearly always told them that it had been a disappointment. If they never came back, having their routes changed, or if they had passed beyond this world and no one was in touch with them, then they were free to dream that they were the fathers of her little children, clinging to her skirts, climbing into her arms, pulling at her hair. That was when the fathers were the happiest, when even she might be deceived into thinking that all had been true and she the mother. It was disturbing, though, every now and then, a postcard coming through the post office, large lettering, something that the old maid clerk could read even without her steamy eyeglasses, the question if the child was ever born yet, and years after the child's conception. How could Esther answer when there was no name signed? No wonder if she pondered endlessly upon the shallowness of the men, their carelessness, their mystifying mystery years, years after the conception, by asking if the child was ever born, when they should have realized that it was stillborn, for they were the sterile fathers, or they were the impotent. They should have known what the answer was. This postcard coming through the post office was not so saddening, however, as the packages coming anonymously year after year at the post office, the long white boxes, always from a different part of the country, always with the strings broken, always with no return address, always with something for a little boy to wear, one might be growing, a white shoe, size 1, size 2, size 3, a white glove, a rubber ball. What father would do this terrible thing to her? What father could not wear a little white shoe or blow a little horn? Was the snowflake? Was the dark light? Was the sky? It would almost make her mad and she would lose another. There was one that scaled like a fish had flopped in the white red-stained glass. The father must have guessed, it must have been, she guessed, a finished worker who had passed here in the evening light and stopped to ask a question. Now she did remember that he had looked like a fish too, gasping and slipped from her numb fingers. But it was probably just her imagination, for one who had had so many stillborn could hardly not imagine things, and even that her heart was hollow and entangled with no creature in the void creation. She ate, avidly, a cold cereal, sooty as with coal dust, a piece of dry bread, a handful of sugar, not because she was hungry, but because she must eat to gather strength for the sake of the little shadow boxer who gathered strength from her, and might lay her low and flooded her frozen meadows, her dark hair streaming, her lips cracked with blood, her bright eyes staring at the sky. Who could be blamed but herself? She had never eaten arrogate with grows, which grows as fungus and on the wild grasses, had never tried to get rid of it, the child. Yet sometimes she would almost doubt the wisdom of bringing a child into such a sad, wrecked world as this. For think of the gray fences, the barbed wires, the thorns, the poison ivy, the troubles, the toils, the coils ahead of them, the floods, the cold winters. But why think so much? Here in the restaurant, she was always busy, walking back and forth beyond the long counter, slapping her sides, and if there were no customers, as on a rainy day, her bright-eyed moods were passed among the heavy shadows, just knitting without thread so that the boss would not see them. At home, she was using her higher education, was wishing the time away, was making faces at her mother behind her mother's back, was playing the upright piano so hard that she had broken the pedals, was learning the alphabet all over again, because she was teaching it to the stillborn, and besides all this, was breeding lovebirds for their big brain boxes, and they're talking and making long sentences with subject and predicate that spill out in the dawnlight when they wanted their water and their mama and their papa. Little squeaking voices like a needle upon a broken record, twittering, "Mama, Papa, water, sweet, please, please, thank you, George Washington, they would say. All like music in her to her tired, drooping ears, which heard the other little squeaking voices upon the broken record of her heart. She would have to change the water and feed the lovebirds every morning before she came to work to change the water and feed the salesman. The lovebirds and the salesman kept her busy. Besides, there was a reason for the lovebirds her having them. Sweetie Petey, Mr. Bubbles, Martin Luther, Beau Guest, the others, for when her mother heard the little voices calling, she naturally supposed that they were the lovebirds with the big brain boxes, and not the others. The little boys streaming in the gray light of dawn, the stillborn who had no thorax. Who cared if people said that she was an old maid with her lovebirds, her knitting, her old parents, that she was ugly and stubborn and mean, that she had always been queer and was a failure? The secret of secrets was hers, this luminescent pregnancy and this career of human wildness which no one but herself could ever realize. If it was a failure, it was hers, she thought, laughing merrily to think of it, that she had been the failure all her life, succeeding only with the lovebirds and the salesmen and the successful stillborn. Stillborn were the most successful. She had been a failure when she taught at the island school that was almost always flooded like herself, who was almost always pregnant, and was fired by the trustees not for that reason, but for having no reason, for rouging her earlobes on a cold winter day of sub-zero, when her ears were frozen and when the veiled tree boughs broke under the heavy weight of snow, had already failed at the normal college and the beauty college, would not be taken by the undertaker to paint the dead for fear she would make them funny, winking in their long sleep, as he told her mother. Was perilously pregnant, however, brilliant but dumb. Her brain being good with four lobes and ridges and hills and valleys, her heart leaking like the sky, the everlasting sky, and it might have no name but Junior. And there were only the chills, the fevers coming farther and farther apart. There was nothing wrong with her, she was sure, but yet there might be something wrong with the atmospheric pressure and the high heavens that arched the earth, something wrong with the abode of the deity and of the blessed dead who wandered when they should be still and tucked away in the graveyard. There was nothing wrong with her but her little fears made physical, old doctor said, that she might be dropsical and dropping her little fears too much everywhere upon the landscape. Her chief trouble was traceable to her parents, he said, that the horror was not to be her parents but to be their child. The parents could rid themselves of the child, but the child could never get rid of the parents, never in lorn eternity. Yet whatever it was, her problem would end with her, he did believe, looking down her throat, his eyes slipping like withered grape skins, his fingers trembling like brittle twigs in a freezing wind. And he predicted that her disappointments would pass away and not be seen again upon the earth. Yet could she not see them, the spider's web, the milk pod, the moth, her little fears made physical? For she had dropped them into the river of floods, the streams, still marsh pools, and had hidden them under the cucumber vines and under the shaggy hills, or in a hollow tree stump under the brown leaves, cocoons, safety pins, her little fears made physical, and knew where they were. The tumbleweeds jumped after her.